back up a little bit this week. The latter part of chapter 41, I really didn't cover it. When I got to looking at it, I thought what kind of fits in better, I think, with this week's lesson anyway. But beginning in verse 44, this is where Pharaoh has put Joseph in charge of all the grain and collecting it. And basically, he's running everything in Egypt, and he's only second and only in name only to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and but without your permission, no one will move his hand or his foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zephaphenia, I think is the way to pronounce it. And he also gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar. I believe that's the way to pronounce it. I worked hard on those three names. But anyway, priest of On, and to be his wife. So Joseph took charge of all the land of Egypt. Now Joseph was 30 years old, so how long has he been in Egypt now?
13.
He was 17 when he was sold in slavery. Got the number swapped there. So he's been basically a slave there in Egypt for 13 years now. So this, you know, this is a big change. Every once in a while you see where somebody's been incarcerated in prison. Finally they realize that he's been in there wrongly and he's released. And all of a sudden it's just a change. And we kind of get maybe the idea of what a drastic change it is for Joseph here. But anyway, Joseph was commissioned by Pharaoh to was in charge of all the land of Egypt. And during the 7 years of abundance, the land produced large and bountiful harvests, and Joseph collected all the excess food in the land of Egypt during the 7 years and stored it in cities. In every city he put food gathered from the fields around it, and Joseph stored up vast amounts of grain like the sand of the sea until he stopped measuring it because it was impossible to measure. So here you see the 7 years of plenty is exactly what Joseph had told from God's word. It's happened, and they stored up all this food in preparation for the 7 years of famine. But during this time, the 7 years, two sons were born to Joseph. Before the famine came, Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, the priest of On, was their mother, and Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, saying, "Certainly God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's house." And he named the second child Ephraim, saying, "Certainly God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." I kind of find it interesting, the two sons and what he named them reflects on kind of maybe the mindset of Joseph here, that after being a slave for 13 years, that he realizes that he's been blessed, and he kind of it helps him to forget the things that's happened. Adam Clark says, talking about to be fruitful, he called his sons by these names because God had enabled him to forget all of his toil, disgrace and affliction, and made him fruitful in the very land in which he suffered the greatest misfortune and indignities. And that's true. And you know, this is something that sometimes we're in the middle of a situation and our suffering is very grievous to us. But once you weather through those storms and you look back at that point, a lot of it is—it's just a brief memory to us. And you look at Joseph's life, and if he had not weathered through all this, and he'd failed the test, what would his life been like? And I think that's something for us to think about in our lives, and how easy it might be sometimes to give in. We self-pity ourselves. We feel like people are against us, the world's against us, and we've become wrapped up in our self-pity. But in looking at this, we realized Joseph was being like steel being tempered, is being tested, and it really prepared him for the position which he found himself in. And I think this is true, and we need to realize this, and I think it's a good lesson for us to look at and realize that we're being tested for a reason. It's like I said Wednesday night, like a week ago, this past Wednesday, a week ago, that we're tried by fire and we've become refined as pure gold. And it's through these tests and trials in our lives that we're formed into what God wants us to become. And I think this is what you see here with Joseph. Same thing is happening here. In verse 53, it says, 7 years of abundance in the land of Egypt came to an end, and then 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had predicted. And the famine was in all the other lands, but throughout the land of Egypt there was food. And when all the land of Egypt experienced a famine, the people cried out to Pharaoh for food. And Pharaoh said to all the people of Egypt, go to Joseph and do whatever he tells you. And while the famine was all over the earth, Joseph opened up the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians. And the famine was severe throughout the land of Egypt. And people from every country came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain because they saw the famine was severe through the earth. So we get into really this week's lesson. Has anybody got any comments on this here? As I said, I think it kind of fits better in with this week's lesson than probably last week's.
You go to show, from this you see that Pharaoh ends up owning, not only ruling over, but owning all of Egypt.
Right. Another thing, I apologize. I remembered my jump drive this week, but I couldn't find it. And so, Lord willing, maybe I'll find it before next week, and I'll have overhead with the questions for those who may be visiting. But beginning in chapter 42, this is where Joseph's brothers come to Egypt. He said, when Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, why are you looking at each other? He said then, look, I hear there's grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy grain so that we may live and not die. So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain from Egypt, but Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, what if something happened, accident happens to him? And so, you know, he is still under the pressure that some misfortune fell on Joseph, and he was killed by some animal. So, you know, he still thinks he's dead. And he doesn't want to send Benjamin in fear of the same thing happening with him. So Israel's sons came to buy grain among the other travelers, for the famine was severe in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was the ruler of the country and the one who sold grain to all the people of the country. Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the ground. And when Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger to them. And he spoke harshly and asked them, where do you come from? And they answered him, from the land of Canaan to buy grain and food. And question number one in our outline says, why might Joseph have recognized his brothers, but them not him?
Way he's dressed.
How long has he been in the land of Egypt now? 20-plus years. It said he started serving, or stood, was before Pharaoh when he was 30, so that's 17 and 7 years of plenty. So he's at least 37, so it's been 20 years since he's seen his brothers, or they've seen him.
One of the reasons was because Joseph did not want
to. Well, after 20 years, our appearance changes. Most of us. I ran into somebody just a few weeks ago that I hadn't seen him probably 40 years or longer. They, I guess, recognized me because they started asking me questions, and then they told me, said, I know you. And I'm thinking, okay. But told me who they were, and I recognized them then, you know, once they told me. But they were not expecting to see. You know, a lot of times you run into somebody that is out of place. You know them, but they're not where you normally see them. And you think, I know you. You know, who are you? And a lot of times, the one I'm thinking about, every time I ever saw the guy, he always wore a cap. Well, this time he didn't have a cap, and he wasn't where he normally, I saw him where he worked. It took me several minutes to figure out who the guy was. So now this is 20 years later, and living in the Egypt, I'm sure he's adapted or taken on some of their customs and their appearance and the way he's dressed. Physical changes, I'm sure. And
they definitely wouldn't expect him to be in that position.
That's right. You know, for all they know, he is dead by now, and they just really wasn't expecting to see him. Why would he probably picked up on who they were right quick?
Because of the way they talk, their dress.
Where they come from.
Where they come from and how many there were. Being that there's 10 of them there, I think those things probably, and he realized who they were. Plus, all of his brothers, I think, or most of them were older than him. So you got to realize that they may not have changed as much. And so he recognized who they were.
Well, there's another thing here, too. They were the slaves now, so to speak, and he was the ruler. They were being subject to him, and before it was the other way around. Well, so the authority there was a position that on both ends was recognized. And that would have been something that would have changed the whole perspective of the meeting coming together.
What other thing is Joseph reminded of now?
His dreams.
His dreams. He's reminded of his dreams when his brothers come and they bow down before him. And all of a sudden, those dreams that he had 20 plus years ago, he remembers them. And, you know, no one was there to able to interpret what his dreams meant. But now it's revealed to him that this is what God was relaying to him back 20-something years ago.
Verse 6 says they bowed down with their faces to the ground. It's kind of hard to recognize somebody when you're looking at the ground.
Right, and we're going to find out a little bit more of this narrative is probably one other reason why they didn't recognize him. But anyway, it says that in verse 8, it says, then Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed about them. And he said unto them, you are spies. You have come to see if our land is vulnerable. Verse 10 says, but they exclaimed, no, my Lord, your servants have come to buy grain for food. We are the sons of one man. We are honest men, your servants, and not spies. And verse 12 says, no, he insisted, but you have come to see if our land is vulnerable. They replied, your servants are of a family of 12 brothers. We are the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. The youngest is with our father at this time, and one is no longer alive. So see, they really think Joseph's dead. They're not expecting to see him and not in this position either. But anyway, in verse, let me back up. Question 3 says, why did Joseph speak through an interpreter and why so harshly? Is he? Let's deal with those two questions. Why would he speak through an interpreter? Like that. Plus, he's accustomed to speaking the Egyptian language at this time. Unlike our country, we have to nearly learn how to speak Spanish to communicate folks. But when in Rome, do as the Romans. He was in Egypt and he spoke their language, and it probably would have tipped him off a little bit. He spoke to them in their language. So he went through an interpreter. Why did he speak to him so harshly?
He wanted to exercise that authority that he had. He knew the situation.
I think he's doing a little assessment of things right here at this point in time.
Well, that would put them more in their position to not recognize him as well.
Right. So, the fourth part of the question is he trying to find something out? And I think, yes, definitely he is. And the latter part of the question says, does his not revealing himself show a vindictive spirit? No? Why?
Later on he says to that his being there was God providing.
Right, there's a lot of things. He's doing an assessment of them. He doesn't know where their heart is, just like when Jacob returned back to the homeland and he was still fearful that Esau was going to kill him. He didn't know how that Esau had changed during this time. And he sent all these gifts and then he realized, you know, things had changed. Joseph doesn't know if his brothers have ever repented from what they've done, if they're sorrowful. He's trying to fill out where they are and what type of people have they become in these 20-something years.
Well, Leonard, don't you see the compassion of Joseph concerning his father?
Oh, yeah.
And he inquires in that direction because no doubt he has, in some sense, realized what his father has suffered by him.
Right.
This comes out in all the communication when he makes reference to his dad and to his younger brother.
Question number four kind of gets into this too. It says, why do you think Joseph showed so much interest in Benjamin? Right. That was his full brother. The rest of them were half brothers. They were both. Both of them's mother was Rachel. So I think that's one of the reasons. So anyway, in verse 14, he's still accused of being a spy. And he says, you'll be tested this way. Surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not depart from this place unless your younger brother comes here. You must go and get your brother, and while the rest of you remain in prison. Says this is the way your words may be tested, to see if you're telling the truth. If not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies. So he imprisoned them all for 3 days. 3 days, kind of interesting, isn't it? Jonah was in the belly of the whale for 3 days. You know, if you're in prison for 3 days, you're going to do some serious soul searching. Jonah did, you know, he's in the belly of the whale. So can you kind of got to put your mindset in those brothers' situation and realize that the things that they've done are coming back to them, and this is where their thinking is. But after 3 days, it says, on the third day, Joseph said to them, do as I say and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, leave one of your brothers confined here in prison while the rest of you go and take grain back to your hungry families. But you must bring your youngest brother to me, and then your words will be verified that you and you will not die. And they did as he said. And this is where they start realizing this is They said surely one to another, or they said to one to another, surely we are being punished because of our brother, because we saw how distressed he was, and he cried for mercy, but we refused to listen. And this is the distress has come on us. And verse 22 is which what John was giving reference to when he heard Reuben, which is question 5. And of course, Reuben went back to, and his plans was to get Joseph out of the pit and take him back to his father. But they sold him during this time before he could get back and do that. And Reuben said unto them, didn't I say to you, don't sin against the boy? But you would not listen. So we are paying, we must pay for the shedding his for shedding his blood. Verse 23 says, now they didn't know that Joseph understood them, for he was speaking through an interpreter. And he turned away from them and wept. And when he turned around and spoke to them again, he had Simeon taken from them and tied up before their eyes. So you see the tender heart of Joseph here, that it touched him. And he's starting to realize kind of where they are. But he's still going to test them further and see if they've changed or not. So, you know, he has Simeon tied up. And I think he did that just to show, to kind of impress upon his brothers that, you know, here he's being tied up and taken from y'all, much like he was taken from them when he was sold into slavery. So that image is burned in their mind, that he's tied up before them and taken back to prison. So they're left to the task to go back and to tell their father what happened. You know, I never did, I don't know how I looked over that, but I never did. Brady, turn to Numbers 32:23 and read that, please. I was looking at that question, and I realized I never did look at that. And he said, but he asked, is a guilty conscience hard to bear? So, you know, sometimes the conscience can play a pretty good role in punishing us for things that we've done. And I guess we can all probably always remember when we were youngsters at home and we did something we knew we wasn't supposed to be doing, and our conscience really worked on us. And, of course, then sometimes when we were finally called about it and addressed, it was kind of a relief. So, conscience is, and if we didn't have a conscience, you know, we never would be convicted of where we are and what we need, which is the blood of Christ to remove our sins from us, that we might stand before God. Any other comments or thoughts on this? So anyway, Joseph gave the orders to fill the bags with the grain and return each man's money to his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. And his orders were carried out. So they loaded the grain on their donkeys and left. When one of them opened his sack to get feed for his donkey at the resting place, he saw his money in the mouth of the sack. And his brothers, he said to his brothers, my money was returned. Here it is in my sack. They were all dismayed, and they turned trembling to one another and said, what has God done to us? You know, here their conscience is starting to really work on them. So they returned, verse 29, they returned to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan and told him all the things that happened to them, saying, the man, the Lord of the land, spoke harshly to us and treated us as if we were spying on the land. But we said unto him, we're honest men, we're not spies, we're from a family of 12 brothers. We're the sons of one father. One is no longer alive, and the youngest was here in the land of Canaan. And then the man, the Lord said, of the land said unto us, this is how we will find out we're honest men. So he tells him the story of what happened and how that Simeon stayed there, and that unless they brought his brother Benjamin back, they would not see his face. He would not even, you know, allow him to come before him. And Joseph, or Jacob, is very much against this at this time. You know, his reaction in verse 36 is, "You're making me childless. Joseph is gone. Simeon is gone. And now you want to take Benjamin. Everything is against me." So they see again the heartbreak on their father. And so they stay there until they run out of food again. And they linger on quite some time, evidently. And the food runs out. And it says, verse 37, it says, "Reuben said to his father, 'You may put my two sons to death. If I do not bring them back to you, put him in my care, and I will bring him back to you.' But Jacob replied, 'My son will not go down there with you, for his brother is dead and he is left alone. If an accident happens to him on the journey, you will make me then to bring down my gray hair and sorrow upon my grave.'" So I kind of hate the way they break this stuff up. You know, it was right here, it was so much on the point of them returning. But yet Reuben offers for his, you know, that if he doesn't bring them back for his two sons, basically, you know, you can kill them, you know. So, but he does not adhere to him at this time. This is probably one of the most interesting parts of Genesis that we'll be studying, and what transpires in the next few lessons. But Jacob, you know, or Joseph, he's in command, and he's told them what they must do in order to for him to return to him. So this really, I've been doing pretty good matching my time up with the class period, but is there any comments by anyone? And found the money in your sack, and you're really dreading having to go back, because you just don't know what's, you know, fear and the unknown is a lot of punishments on us at times, and this is what I see happening to his brothers. That I don't know how long it was that from the time they went down to the food runs out and they have to go back. But all that time, they're thinking about it, and I'm sure they're thinking about what their brother went through at this time, and the grief that they caused him. Any other thoughts on it?
One thing they observed, they followed all the rules that they needed to follow to make sure that they did what they're supposed to. In other words, the money that was found, they made sure they carried it back.
Right.
And kind of towed the line because they wanted to do as near right as they knew how.
Yeah. And, you know, like I say, I think we see in Reuben, although he made mistakes, I think you see that Reuben was maybe had some character about him. You know, he lay with his father's concubine, but he was condemned for that. But yet, you see with them taking Joseph that he had compassion there, and his intentions was to go back. So I think you see some honorable characteristics there with Reuben. It's, you know, a lot of times we dwell upon the negative so much in our lives, and we don't look at positive points. We're quick to condemn sometimes, and maybe not quick enough to praise sometimes. And I think we see this with the rearing of our children, that you know, we need to correct them and tell them where they're wrong, but then when they do things that are good, we need to praise them and recognize them for it.
Well, another thing involved in this, they were hungry. They were doing this to sustain themselves.
Right.
When you're not out of anything deep, there's a lot of things you might do that you otherwise would.
Yeah.
None of us have experienced that, of course.
Right. So, you know, I think back when Hurricane Katrina hit, and there was looting going on down there in New Orleans. And, you know, if somebody was getting in place and getting food, it's one thing. You kind of understand that. And this is the kind of situation they were in. They were in a desperate situation. And so they did pretty much what they had to do, and they bowed down, and then this, like I said, this is the that dream that he had coming about. And so he didn't understand it, but he's starting to now. And you'll see this later when he reveals himself to his brothers, that he realized there was a purpose in all this for that God had for him. So we need to realize this, that sometimes these, like I say, these trials that we have in our life, they're for something, to try to prepare us for something else. I was trying to remember, there's a lady that I know that lost her son, and she's really struggled with dealing with those things, but yet there was somebody else that had been, I think, in a similar situation. Sometimes that prepares us to help them. And through difficult times, and I remember a case here that someone had lost their spouse, and when Brother Dale Smeltzer was here, they talked to him about losing your spouse, and Brother Smeltzer, of course, had been through that. And like I say, they're difficult times, but they prepare us for other things in our lives, and it prepares us really to be a source of strength for others.
Well, like you said before, when we go through these trials, it makes us stronger if we survive.
It does. And like I said, we just don't know what we might be being prepared for, but yet, and I'm sure Joseph didn't know why these things came about, but later it's revealed. Job didn't know why he was being tested, but he remained faithful. And, you know, came back with a lot more than he had to begin with. So we just need to realize that, you know, when we're tested, no trial seems to be a comfort anyway. But when we endure, you know, we're blessed then. So this is, I think, the lesson that we see here.
Well, feel those calluses in your hands.
Yeah.
You know how you got them.
Yeah. Okay, so next Lord's Day we'll pick up with chapter 43.